being here.
Thank you, commissioners, and good afternoon. I've got some brief legal submissions that really are only concentrating on that part of NZSKI's submission around the exemption to the Indigenous Vegetation Clearance Rule.
Right.
That's really the only legal issue that I see that's arisen out of that submission that is presented to you today. So NZSKI has filed a submission to the plan requesting that the clearance of Indigenous vegetation within the ski area subzones be exempt from the Indigenous Vegetation Clearance Rules, provided that such an exemption will only apply to public conservation land that is administered by the Department of Conservation. Mr. Dent fully explains the background to NZSKI's position in his statement of evidence. By way of summary, NZSKI's operations necessitate regular earthworks activities and associated clearance of Indigenous vegetation. As the Remarkables and the Coronet Peak ski areas are located within the public conservation land managed and administered by DOC, NZSKI is bound to comply with their requirements with respect to clearance of Indigenous vegetation, and that's as contained in the Conservation Act. The level of assessment undertaken by DOC in considering applications to clear Indigenous vegetation is the same as which would be undertaken by the QLDC in respect of a resource consent application made under RMA. NZSKI wishes to reduce the duplication of submitting applications to remove Indigenous vegetation under both the Conservation Act and the RMA. DOC's position: DOC lodged a further submission, originally stating it preferred vegetation clearance on public conservation land to be subject to the controls in the RMA. In advance of the hearing, NZSKI and DOC entered into discussions which culminated in DOC agreeing to withdraw that further submission, but only to the extent that it no longer opposes an exemption to vegetation clearance on public conservation land. The Council's position is that the relief that's sought by NZSKI could be supported in respect of land that's conservation area, as defined in the Act, managed by DOC and has the relevant approval. I've just set out the summary from Mr. Barr's evidence, I won't repeat that. The statutory framework and provisions of the Act relevant to NZSKI submissions are, of course, Section 6C and Section 31 there. Those provisions set out the Council's duties and functions with respect to maintenance of Indigenous biological diversity. I won't read Section 6C, nor Section 31, which I've set out there. Issues for consideration, case law. Similar exemptions have been considered by the Environment Court in Royal Forest and Bird and Central Otago and Royal Forest and Bird and Waitaki District Council, and I've provided you the Waitaki District Council case. It's the more recent. Don't rely on anything that's in the Central Otago case, so I have not provided that to you. The court in Central Otago upheld an exemption on grounds that the tender review process sufficiently addressed Section 6C matters, and that pastoral leaseholders would be less willing to enter into tender review process should freehold land then be subject to protections and controls under the Act, thereby lose the opportunity for environmental benefits associated with tender review. The court in Waitaki distinguished the Central Otago case and held it had very limited relevance, given it concerned a different district under different legislative provisions and policy and different evidence. In Waitaki, the blanket permitted activity status for Indigenous clearance on land freeholded through the tender review process was proposed, and the court held that such an exemption would not promote the purpose of the Act and directed the exemption be deleted from the Waitaki plan.
I take it the courts were differently constituted.
Yes, they were, and interestingly, the Waitaki decision was constituted of three commissioners and
judge.
And it was very well written and reasoned decision, I thought. Although I think one of those commissioners is qualified.
Yes,
not that matters. So the court was particularly concerned in Waitaki that the level of assessment of Indigenous vegetation matters undertaken during the tenure review process was not as rigorous as that which could be undertaken in an RMA process, and in fact there was evidence before the court in that case that pastoral lease tenure review outcomes had not always resulted in protection of SNAs, particularly at lower elevations. And so the reason I mention that case, we're not obviously seeking an exemption here for tenure review, but we are seeking an exemption based on another statutory process. And I wanted to distinguish Waitaki and the matters that the court had found.
That's okay. It's helpful for us to have that case anyway.
Yes. We are a different category here with our proposal. So Waitaki can be distinguished from the exemption sought by NZ Ski because the effects of Indigenous clearance, vegetation clearance, would be controlled through the DOC concession process. That's not something that occurs with tenure review. And the DOC assessment process, I say, is equally as rigorous as an assessment undertaken by the Council under the Act, and the outcomes of the process will result in protection of Section 6C matters. And here, just departing from my submissions and turning to the casebook, I know you've probably had multitudes of paper in this process already, but I've included in the casebook a recent concession that was granted to NZ Ski for Indigenous vegetation clearance associated with a pipeline and water take within the conservation area. It's an extremely comprehensive decision. It has got extremely comprehensive conditions, including around monitoring. The genesis of the matters that the department considers are found in the conservation management strategy, which the operative one is some 800 pages in length, and it's a very detailed document. The other document is a resource consent that's had been granted by QLDC, essentially for exactly the same clearance. It's about 9 pages long, and the conditions pretty much replicate those that were in the DOC concession. So I think therein lies sort of my submission that there is a duplication of process, and I would say that the conditions of the DOC concession go further to protecting Section 6C matters than does the Council consent in this case, particularly around monitoring. And I haven't talked about cost, but obviously...
I've just been handed a note saying that your submissions could pretty much end at that point, wouldn't we?
Oh, they could. All right, well, I just wanted to touch on one final matter because I thought it might be a question from you, Mr. Chairman, around Section 31 and what might be meant by control. And I say that and it's not a matter that's been raised previously in any of these Environment Court cases, but I say control in the context of Section 31 means that the Council can specify the methods to control the effects. It doesn't have to be in control of the actual process itself, so therefore it's perfectly legitimate to say there is another statutory process or control that is in place that will fulfil those Section 31 and 6C duties. The rest of my submission there really just talks about the rules that I think you'd ask the Council to draft.
Yeah.
And Mr. Dent has commented on that in his summary, and I agree with the issues that he's raised in that rule.
The other question I'll raise with you regarding this, and we hadn't have come up against the time, I would have asked Ms. Baker Galloway too, because she raised exactly the same issue, but rather wider with other legislation. Is in terms of the exemptions that sought in respect of conservation land and concessions, I'm wondering whether Section 4 provides a template for a rule where it says, when Section 4 says it does not apply to any work of the activity of the Crown held on land under the Conservation Act where it is consistent with a conservation management strategy and does not have a significant adverse effect beyond the boundaries of the site. And clearly it would need to be changed slightly, but the way I understand it, the concession has to be in accordance with the conservation management strategy under the Conservation Act. And if there's not a significant adverse effect beyond the boundary of the site, the boundary of the area of the land,
yes.
That would also cover the other aspects that the council could potentially be concerned about.
Mm.
From a legal point of view, that provides an appropriate framework.
Yes, I agree. Well, yes.
Mr. Bennett might have a chance to comment on that to me. Yes. Any questions? This will come up. No, thank you.
I'll start at paragraph 1.2, seeing as I introduced myself to the panel yesterday afternoon.
Yes.
The primary matters which have been addressed in my pre-circulated evidence relate to three separate areas of the proposed district plan, specifically the definition section in respect of ski area activities and public conservation land, the provisions for activities in ski area subzones in Chapter 21, and the provisions for clearance of indigenous vegetation in L1 environments in Chapter 33. I have considerable experience in the application of the district plan provisions with respect to development and vegetation clearance in the ski area subzones. Specifically, I've prepared and overseen the processing of 11 OIC consent applications, 9 QLBC consent applications, and 2 notified dock concession applications for works in and in close proximity to the remarkable ski area since 2011. In my experience, the operative provisions for buildings, passenger lift systems, have worked appropriately and afforded NZ Ski Limited with sufficient certainty to embark upon large-scale redevelopment whilst remaining cognizant of the council's matters of control. I'm not aware of any significant issues that have arisen in the processing of their respective resource consents with the Queensland Lakes District Council or concerns raised post their development in terms of adverse landscape effects. As such, I support the retention of these provisions, which the council has essentially rolled over in the proposed district plan. In my opinion, only minor modifications are required to the provisions as notified to recognise and provide for the year-round use of the ski area subzones for ski area activities, but also appropriately scaled commercial recreation and visitor accommodation activities. I consider that allowing a diversified year-round use of these areas, subject to control over the scale, nature, and intensity of such use, is a more efficient use of these consolidated hubs of alpine infrastructure. I also note that such matters are recognised in the proposed Conservation Management Strategy 2015-2025, which is currently before the Conservation Authority for final signing. And in this regard, I would like to draw the panel's attention to section 3.25, ski fields, on page 171 of the proposed conservation management strategy. And I'd just like to read you an excerpt from that section. The effects of climate change may result in fields becoming increasingly reliant on snow maintenance in the future and may look to expanding in winter and summer visitor activities both on fields and nearby. These changes will start taking effect during the term of the CMS, but may take decades to become fully apparent. In response, both a precautionary and a partnership approach may be needed. Precautionary to avoid the risk of abandoned structures and adverse landscape effects, partnership to maintain a ski field's recreational opportunity. And there's a specific policy under that section, policy 3.25.4, that states, where practical, encourage non-skier and or non-ski season visitor use and visitor use beyond the ski field consistent with the outcomes at place. In regards to Indigenous vegetation clearance, I have identified in Appendix B of my primary evidence that NZ Ski Limited, in particular, has extensive protocols in place with the Department of Conservation in respect to terrain modification and Indigenous vegetation clearance. Further, through the concession applications I've been involved in, the Department of Conservation are provided with comprehensive ecological assessments of the impacts of any proposed works. When the required Queenstown Lakes District Council consents are sought, these same assessments are provided to the council, and DOC's effective party approval will stipulate compliance with these protocols or the specific conditions that have been derived from them on the relevant concession document. Council, in my experience, then tend to proceed and accept this expert advice and issue consents that largely replicate these conditions. In my opinion, this is an inefficient process with no net benefit for Indigenous biodiversity values. As such, I support a permitted activity status for vegetation clearance in ski area subzones and public conservation land. While DOC initially opposed this position, I met with the operations manager and later liaised with their planner, Mr. Jeff DeVell, and explained NZ Ski Limited's position in detail. With more detailed explanation, DOC have now agreed to the withdrawal of their opposing submission on this matter. I am also aware that the hearings panel requested the council to consider wording for a permitted activity rule, as I have suggested on behalf of NZ Ski Limited, and I have read the memorandum dated 16th of May 2016. With respect, I don't consider the proposed wording to be appropriate for a permitted activity, specifically parts B and B, and I know that's how they're drafted, require the submission of information to the council and relies on the satisfaction of the council as to the quality of the concession application and the assessment of effects. There is no certainty in that proposed rule for ski field operators, and no efficiency of documentation must still be submitted to the council for some form of approval. I therefore consider that my proposed permitted activity rule described in paragraph 164 of my evidence is more appropriate, as it is concise, clear, and efficient. I'm happy to answer questions from the panel.
Associated with vegetation clearance as well.
Mm.
So that could well be a very relevant consideration.
Thank you.
I've only got one question. I know no one believes me, but it is only one. In terms of that exclusion part, would there be any issues around permitted baseline? Issues that you can think of that might arise through that permitted activity? Stand?
I wouldn't think so, sir. The ski area subzones themselves are pretty unique and isolated environments within the alpine environment. I think any other large-scale clearance of vegetation within an alpine area would be very unlikely to apply. Ski area subzone exemption would be fanciful in my opinion.
Thank you very much. Nothing further.
Thank you, Mr. Dent. Your summary of your evidence at 1.5, you're talking about providing for a diversified year-round use of the ski area subzones. Would that apply to all ski area subzones in the district?
Yes, it would.
That's your suggestion?
Yes.
Given that the we tend to have a blanket of snow between kind of winter use up there and a very fragile sort of land surface and ecology during the winter months, and the landscapes and ecology is much more exposed through the summer. Do you think there's some subzones that should be protected from summer use? Just in case we don't have perfect information and whatever effects that we might have on those areas are irreversible, take a long, long time to recover?
No, I don't think so. In my knowledge, there already is a lot of summertime use of a lot of the ski area subzones. My specific experience has been primarily with the Remarkables, and for example, the Remarkables is a gateway to a number of short day walks and longer overnight trips, whether it's from the base facilities to Lake Alta. People also camp at Lake Alta as well, and there's tramping circuits over into Wye Creek and the Doolins Basin as well. And my understanding is a lot of people come up and recreate in the ski area subzone generally over the summer period as well. I'm also aware that the likes of Cadrona Alpine Resort have summertime activities, where there's trail walking and mountain biking and other activities like that as well. So based on the existing environment, the existing use, so I don't think there'd be a need to look at restricting summer use.
So on that basis, would you say that diversified year-round use is already recognised and provided for?
It's already occurring, but I don't believe it's specifically provided for, certainly not within the operative or the proposed district plan provisions. And it is recognised by the Department of Conservation in their documentation, their conservation management strategies, but not in our framework.
Thank you.
The only question I had is one that I also asked Mr. Ferguson. In the definition of ski area activities, paragraph 97, and talks about the use of snow groomers, snowmobiles, and four-wheel drive vehicles. I'm just wondering, to the extent that we really need to state those things in the definition, do you have a view on that?
Well, I believe that's been rolled over from the existing definition.
Yes.
And those are frequent operational activities within the ski area subzones, both throughout their summer, their winter ski field operations as well, but also during the summer period. Four-wheel drive vehicles are frequently used as part of the terrain modification, building works, and so on site as well. So I think it is still a relevant component to the definition.
The extent that it needs to be identified in that way as opposed to ancillary activities or supported operation. I wonder if the specific mention of those things excludes others that may occur, and whether I understand that those things occur.
Yes.
But whether we're just being a little bit precious in defining every little thing. Are we saying also you have to ski on skis and snowboards?
Yes, when you put it like that, sir, I think you're right. That makes sense. If you could simplify and simply refer to ancillary activities, that would have sufficient breadth to cover all that use and anything that make the all those intentions have been missed in the drafting of that definition.
Ms. McDonald, you're probably going to see a second bite of the definition if you wish to, when we hear the definition, if you wanted to put forward an alternative drafting.
Yes.
Yes. think definitions shouldn't try and be precise, but not so precise as to perhaps catch us out in the future.
Thank you.